Our words of reflection are from John O'Donohue. May you recognize in your life the presence, power, and light of your soul. May you realize you are never alone, that your soul, in its brightness and belonging, connects you intimately with the rhythm of the universe. May you have respect for your individuality and difference. May you realize that the shape of your soul is unique, that you have a special destiny here, that behind the facade of your life, there is something beautiful and eternal happening. May you learn to see yourself with the same delight, pride, and expectation with which God sees you in every moment.
So this reflection of is from John O'Donohue. He is he's late, is not with us in this realm anymore. He's a Celtic mystic, and for a time he was a priest. And I got this whole idea of belonging to one's soul from reading a book of his called Anam Cara, which means soul friend in Gaelic. So he talks about soul in such a kind and compassionate way. And because I was one of those people who tried to whip my soul into shape after reading each new self-help book or practicing some new meditation technique, I relaxed into his idea that the soul does not want to be bullied into submission. He says that the soul does not like neon light. It rather responds to candlelight. This idea is that we do not approach the soul directly. I was reminded, actually, of a line from an Emily Dickinson poem where she says, "Tell the truth, but tell it slant." So approaching the soul slantwise with kindness made sense to me. In addition, he shared that we need first to belong to our own soul before we reach out to others in the same gentle way that we approached our own soul. I wondered about soul, and in my research discovered two mystic ways to look at the soul. I'm going to share these two mystic concepts of soul in order to give you some context for what it means to belong to one's soul. And then in the second half of the talk, I will share some techniques that I use to develop conscious self-awareness through soul work. Now, these are not the only practices that help us to touch our inner depths. Any activity like painting, dance, walking in nature, and listening to music, any activity that resonates with us and moves us to a place of bliss can be meditative. In fact, one can touch stillness through any creative act that will take you out of your ego, out of your ego self, and into deep connectedness. Let me then begin with these mystic concepts of soul that give context to my talk. The first one comes from the Kabbalah. I don't know if people are familiar with this, but it is a Jewish text, Jewish mystical text. And they compare the soul in that text, the rabbis who do this midrash, and I'll talk about that in a minute, on what is said in the Torah. So in this text, the soul is likened to the three faces of a candle. There is the dark, mysterious wick, the animating part of the soul that keeps the flame lit. The wick serves as a resting place for the light, the divine breath, the conscious self. Light cannot happen without the wick. These two, when fully in partnership, give birth to the illuminating aura, the heat around the flame. As the wick and flame birth the heat, the animal and divine parts of our soul birth our essence. Thus, we can see the soul not as a single entity, but rather a composite of elements, like our ego that is comprised of many identities like mother, son, lawyer, the soul is comprised of lots of selves that we have collected over the years, some positive, some negative. We tend to suppress the negative ones, but the idea of soul making has us bring all our voices, all ourselves, to the table, as it were, into the light, so that we can deal with them and transform them. Now, so this second concept has to do with bringing ourselves to the table, and it to a banquet table. And I know that I didn't say much about this in the when I wrote it out, but Jesus actually uses this banquet table to invite people that are intimate and then reaches out and out and out. But he actually got this concept from Proverbs in Hebrew. So in Proverbs in the Old Testament, Chokmah, which is the Hebrew name for holy wisdom, invites the parts of the soul to a banquet table. Now, if you read Proverbs, you're just going to find a one-liner that says, you know, and Chokmah prepared a banquet. That's all. When you do Midrash, and I explained in some talks I've given before, because Arabic and Hebrew and Aramaic, the language of Jesus, are you know, with the characters, and they can expand meanings of things by looking at these characters and seeing, you know, what, and then explore that all the meanings of that word, and then all the meanings of the roots of the word that come from that, so that they expand the meaning. So in the Midrash of this section on Chokmah, or holy wisdom in Proverbs, she calls to her table the various parts of the soul. The Midrash reads, "She has spread out a table to nourish the selves by ordering matter and light, form and vibration in a reliable and harmonious way." The soul search, so you see here in the Midrash that what we're doing is bringing all those selves, all those voices, all those parts of us to the table so we can nourish them. This soul searching calls for silence and solitude. One might even chant the Hebrew for wisdom, elongating the Chokmah to Chokmah. So this repeating, elongating, and repeating can bring us to a quiet place that we need to invite the voices to the table. This chanting works like, if you're familiar with mindfulness Buddhist meditation or the mantra in transcendental meditation, it's similar to that, the chanting. Because what all these techniques do is focus your mind so that you're still enough to call the voice to the table and explore the qualities the voice brings to your soul self. So who are these voices? This kindergarten of kids that we have collected over a lifetime. These are elements of ourself, both positive and negative, that are part of our being. Both the dark and the light elements live there. And the idea is that you're not going to be afraid of the dark parts, because those are only parts that haven't been brought to light. So, you invite these qualities or voices to the banquet, and you allow them to be heard. Once heard, a voice may no longer lead us into self-destructive behavior, and that's the problem with repressing or suppressing parts of ourselves we don't like. Then they take charge, and they start having us behave in ways that we're not real proud of. Now, Suman Kidd, in her book on spiritual direction, When the Heart Waits, gives her kindergarten kids names from children's stories. So we find the Tin Man, Chicken Little, the Tinsel Star, and Little Red Hen. I found these useful personally because when I would do this practice and try to talk to myself, I'd think, well, who is this self, you know, and giving them these names really helped me. So I'm going to give you an example. Let's do Little Red Hen. So if the Little Red Hen part of yourself takes over, you want to do it all yourself. You can't delegate. You don't trust anybody. You see the universe as a place of scarcity. Since you think there might not be enough for you, you might even become ungenerous and controlling and fear others will harm you. If you invite this quality of self to the table, you tell her that the universe is abundant, everyone is not out to get her, and it is okay to ask for help. You let her know that you will be in charge and can take care of her even as you explore ways of being that scare her. Little Red Hen remains part of the kindergarten, but she is not in charge. And because she feels cared for, Little Red Hen relaxes and allows you to become a complete, more functional human being. And as you continue to acknowledge all the parts of your soul, you develop conscious self-awareness. Developing conscious self-awareness is a process that is done with kindness and compassion. Since we accumulate this kindergarten of voices over a lifetime, it may take the rest of our lifetime to tend them all, and we may have to revisit those that have been around for a long time. In addition, some qualities may have been useful once, but no longer serve our purpose. We need not criticize ourselves because we find some of our kindergarten kids are mean or unkind. What we want is to keep working with them until they become quiet, transform, or maybe go to sleep. Over time, as we become more aware of who we are able to live more complete lives. When we learn to cherish and be kind to all the kindergarten kids, we need not fear parts of our soul that do not fit with our ego's image of who we are. We understand that who we are is not our ego's understanding, but rather a deeper, more eternal being. Working towards self-conscious self-awareness is a lifetime work. And we do not give up living to do it. In fact, becoming more aware allows us to live more fully. The world needs a lot of fixing, and we cannot fix all of it ourselves. The more we are aware, the more obvious it is what is ours to do. I remember being distraught over this idea of what does God want me to do, because in the Christian context, it seemed that what I wanted and what God wanted were not the same. In this new paradigm, we assess our interests and talents so that when we ask ourselves, what is mine to do, we know ourselves well enough to better assess what that is. Rather than our purpose, what is ours to do, being something alien to us, we are working out of our strengths. Also, it is wise to remember that we have lots of purposes throughout our lives, that we are a work in progress. The idea of being born again is not a single happening. We are indeed being reborn each day, each hour, as we live through our days and change, depending on our experiences. Neil Douglas Klotz, in his Midrash on the born again passage, says Jesus refers back to Genesis, that we are born again from the first beginning, that Brian Swim likes to call it the great flaring forth. We are born out of the original dawning of power and light that we share with all lives. All that lives evolves. The hydrogen cloud from the Big Bang became stars and trees and us. And our unformed infant self evolves as we discover our talents and strengths and understand what our purposes are. In this context, we are each a manifestation of the universe. Each of us is a diversity in the unity that is the universe. Each of us wants to belong, and indeed we do belong. We are all part of the same star stuff. We are connected to all that is, but we first have to belong to ourselves. We need to feel ourselves as a diversity in this unity so that we can reach out in ever-widening circles to other humans, flora and fauna, to the great universe and all the stars in the sky. We cannot become complete without interaction with our environment. As I interacted with my environment, I learned ways to focus the mind and attain stillness. First, not with a spiritual practice, but in a secular way. In the 1970s, I was an occupational health nurse at the Office of Management and Budget. I spent a lot of time listening to stories of the stress my employees felt. So I searched for stress-relieving practices for my employees. The woman I found to do a health education program on reducing stress did not talk of mindfulness, but rather following the breath to quiet the mind and allow the brain to go into an alpha state. So she came at it not from a spiritual way, but in a scientific way. Rupert Sheldrake, also a British scientist who writes about science and spirituality, says that science can actually measure the changes that happen to us when we meditate, whatever that meditation may be, that our heart rate slows down, that our breathing gets slower. So all these things can be measured. Thus, focusing the mind has an effect on the body. The other ideas I found useful, besides mindfulness, to achieve this higher consciousness that we attain during meditation, have to do with movement. My exploration of practices did start with the mindfulness that I learned as stress reduction. As I became more familiar with Buddhist practices, then I saw it as mindfulness. And then I found an interesting type of meditation done at the Shalem Center in D.C., and it was called Kumne meditation. And first we would sit and meditate. We would follow our breath for 20 minutes. And in the second part of the meditation, we moved, okay? And so we could feel in our body some of the emotions that came up when we sat still, so that we could see, we made a mind-body connection with the movement. We danced the feelings that came up when we sat quietly following our breath. We could find the places in our body where we were holding the emotions that occurred in our mind as thoughts. In the dancing process, we could release emotions. I found that balancing sitting with movement, one that resonated with me. Therefore, when I discovered Tai Chi, I loved not only the feeling of flowing from one position to another pleasurable, I also discovered that the movements were as relaxing as mindfulness can be. Tai Chi is based on the Chinese idea of meridians and moving Qi energy. I'm going to insert something here that I don't have written down, and that is, I learned from this Tai Chi teacher, I can't remember what brought this up. He talked a lot about, you know, letting go and, you know, being in the moment and with movement. And I used to have a really hard time when we sailed if the wind was behind us. I was good if it was coming across the beams, but behind us I was always luffing the sails, and I was always, never knew what to do with the tiller. And so I remembered something he said, and what I decided to do was to become one with the boat. And so I grabbed the tiller, and rather than trying to figure out what to do with it, it was like I did actually become part of the boat. And so I was moving the tiller to sail, and it was working as long as I just stayed with that. And then when my husband yelled at me, it disappeared. Because he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm one with the boat." He said, "You better stop that. You're going to wreck, and you're going to put us on a shoal." Anyway, but I really enjoyed that practice of becoming one with the boat. I did it after that. I just didn't tell. Anyway. So, lately I've been doing Qigong meditation, which is similar to Tai Chi, but it doesn't require remembering in which sequence to do the postures. And I have to tell you that when you get old, that's a plus. And my delight with Qigong has to do with Bing Kun Hu, whose DVDs I have been using. He has this delightful way of misusing pronouns, which I find charming. So when he talked about two dragons play a chi ball, I was hooked, you know. And so I liked this idea, you know, rather than if you look at Tai Chi or Qigong practices taught by Western people, they talk about it in a more logical way. But I mean, I love this playful way of, I'm going to do this. So you see this. There's these two dragons. If you can say this chi that you're moving is two dragons, you imagine them playing with this chi ball. So I searched out the Tai Chi and Qigong practices, but sometimes we discover a practice by being open to opportunity. When I was in California studying with Matthew Fox, one of our classmates called me and asked if I wanted to go to do the Dances of Universal Peace. I didn't have a clue. So I said to her, well, anything with peace in the title should be all right. So off we went to a church basement in El Cerrito. The dances are circle dances, where one repeats a line from a sacred text, and it could be any sacred text, you know, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, any kind. And then there's dance steps that go with it. It was developed by a man named Samuel Lewis back in the 60s, where he was during the Vietnam War, and he was looking for a way that people could release their frustrations about working for justice about the war. And so he developed these dances. So there we are, and I was actually stunned by what happened to me. We moved from dance to dance, and I was enjoying the singing, the movement, and the drum that was keeping the beat. Then there were no dancers, no building, no me, only the unity and the drum beat. I was transported into Alpha, or what the dervishes call the magnificence. I had no idea that movement could do that. Since then, I have learned that this is what happens to the dervishes when they spin. And in fact, spinning is part of many of the dances of universal peace. I'm sharing this experience as an introduction to the idea that whatever resonates with our soul can be used to take us out of the world of ego and into the world where everything is connected. This could be listening to music or being present in nature. Both these activities are excellent ways to contact stillness. Other activities that can work to take us out of ourselves into the wider unity are painting, singing, chanting, playing an instrument, anything that resonates with us, that we love, and that we can get lost in, can be a springboard to our inner depths. Finding practices that work are important if we are interested in doing social justice work, since we need to find ways to nourish ourselves while we're doing this work. Belonging to our souls is not an end in itself. It is a way to become self-aware so that we can achieve what our purposes are in life. Belonging to ourselves is a springboard into kindness and compassion for others. We expand our belonging into ever-widening circles, taking the kindness and compassion from our souls into the world. The closing words are also from the Dead Sea Scrolls. May the unnameable one enlighten the heart of your passion with the contemplation of living energy in all life. May the universe being uncover hidden understanding within you, insight into life's diversity as it flows from the first now. Blessed be.